You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
Stephen Harper was outed by the Mali ambassador to Canada when he tried to keep secret his initial decision to contribute military support for the French bombing of Mali. Then Harper said Canada only would provide a single CF-17 transport plane to ferry military equipment to French troops in northern Mali, and that would stop after 1 week. But now, just the other day, in fact, Harper has extended this to 1 month. As though this new war against terrorism will be another short adventure, ending in quick victory, just like Iraq and Afghanistan. Well, to analyze this latest imperial war, we reach Con Hallinan in Santa Cruz, California. Con Hallinan is an analyst of international affairs, and he writes for Foreign Policy in Focus. Good morning, Con, and welcome back to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio.
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
Fine. Now, when another war on quote-unquote terror begins, we've all learned to ask, what does that country have that the war makers want? So what is up for plunder in Mali?
Well, there are a number of levels on this. What's up for plunder in Mali right now is that Mali and is one of a group of countries that made up what was formerly called French West Africa, and it includes Niger and Senegal and Mauritania and Guinea, Ivory Coast, Burkina Faso, Chad, and Algeria, which is the big dog on the block, and the Central African Republic. And this is an area that France extracts most of its uranium from. And what most people don't realize is that France is a major country. France uses more nuclear power to generate energy than any other country. 75% of its power is generated by nuclear power, and most of that comes from Niger, and there are also uranium deposits, as well as gold and possibly oil and gas in northern Mali. So, you know, part of this is that this is a post-colonial war, but it's one in which the former colonist has enormous investments, etc. And not only is people talking about the war in Mali, but there's also a war going on in Niger between much of the same group of people, the Tuaregs, who are fighting in Mali, in northern Mali, and the French in Niger, and over access to services and a cut of the pie from uranium mining, etc. So you're absolutely correct to say that, you know, at the bottom, this is about euros.
Now, this war started by France is rationalized as a war against jihadi terrorists, as we've come to refer to them, and in this case with the initials AIQM. I don't think we need to go further into the full name. Now, an ethnic group that you just mentioned, the Tuareg people, aren't much mentioned in our media now, but they're quite central in this struggle. Could you tell us a bit about who the Tuareg are?
Well, the Tuaregs are nomadic people. They're actually desert Berbers. So they're not Arab. They don't speak Arabic. They have controlled the trade across the Sahara for 1,000 years, or more than 1,000 years. There was, in the old days, there was a huge trade of salt going from the north to the south, and slaves going from the south to the north, and gold, and et cetera. And the Tuaregs largely controlled that trade. And they were the people who really, in a way, they didn't start it. Actually, what happened was, you mentioned before this war on terrorism. About 4 years ago, the United States began pouring a lot of money into Mali and other countries in what they call the Trans-Sahel area, which Sahel just means, that's where Sahara comes from. And they gave a lot of money to the Mali army, supposedly to fight terrorism in the Sahel. Now, there really wasn't any terrorism in the Sahel. There were very marginal small groups in southern Algeria and a few in northern Mali. They didn't pose a threat to anybody. Even right now, the U.S. Intelligence agencies have reached a conclusion that the current group of people fighting Mali do not pose a threat to the United States. They see them more as a regional threat. So what happened was that the Tuaregs had always had a very close relationship with Muammar Gaddafi. And he supported their demands for autonomy or even for a separate state. And then a lot of them served in the Libyan army. When Libya collapsed under the Allied assault, those Tuaregs looted these vast warehouses and stockpiles of weapons and took them back to northern Mali. The Malian army had not used the money given to the United States by fighting terrorism. I said there really wasn't any terrorism. They used it to beat up on the Tuaregs. Well, the Tuaregs came back with a lot of very fancy stuff and proceeded to demolish the Mali army and drove them out of northern Mali. Where the Islamists come in was that the Tuaregs are not, they're nomadic, so that they took towns like Timbuktu and Gao and things like that, but they're not people live in cities. They just went back into the desert, and that created a kind of a vacuum, and into that flowed a number of these Islamic groups, although it is important, one of the major Islamic groups, Ansar al-Dine, is a Tuareg group, and it's ethnically Tuareg. Qaeda and the Islamic Maghreb, you know, I'm not even sure it really exists as an organization. It's more of a kind of ideology. So the Tuaregs, in a sense, were the people who initiated this, although, in fact, it was the Malian army before that. And then, of course, the main impetus to this whole thing was the intervention in the civil war in Libya.
Yeah, so the great NATO scheme in Libya left a shattered society, and the pieces have been falling through the West African region. We hear also, like your comment, we hear a lot of references, of course, to the Mali government as though it were some established democratic structure. What can you tell us about what's called the Mali government?
Well, it used to be an established democratic government, but right after the Tuaregs launched their attack on the Malian army, I think about 4 months after that attack, and that was in, I think, January last year, and the Malian army, or a section of the Malian army anyhow, pulled off a coup d'etat and threw out the democratically elected government in Mali. And the guy who led that particular coup was someone who had been trained extensively in the United States. And in fact, there's even some pretty good studies that indicate that if you get trained by the United States, you're more liable to be involved in coup activities than if you don't. And I think that in a certain sense, what happened is by strengthening these militaries, they strengthened them to the point of where they basically overwhelmed the civilian authorities. So we don't have a democracy right now in Mali, and we haven't had since the coup 4 months after this war began.
Now, you mentioned the relative minor role of Muslim terrorist or jihadist groups, but the connection with Algeria seems to me something that hasn't been much discussed, and people seem to be largely unaware that there was a us movement, an Arab Spring in Algeria in 1990, where there was going to be a democratic process of election, but it turned out that a non-terrorist Islamic party was clearly set to win, and there too there was a military coup, which has led to a massive slaughter in Algeria. Some of it's still ongoing. We're estimated 200,000 Algerian people have been killed. Is the development of this AIQM connected at all to that whole process which took place 2 decades ago?
Well, it certainly is related, and you're absolutely correct. The Algerian civil war was a stunningly violent and bloody affair, and you know, as you point out, what happened was that the Islamic parties were getting ready to win the election, and the army said, "No, we're not going to have an election," and the place blew up. What happened is that there was a very small group, and I mean small, I'm talking about 30 or 40 people, that was located in southern Algeria, and it was an organization that really, it's a very odd organization. A lot of people have written about it, but the guy who ran it is a sort of a charismatic sort of character, but they didn't really do much or anything. And then after the stuff started in Somalia and in Yemen, and the war in Afghanistan and the extension of the war into Pakistan through the drones, this organization renamed itself Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb. Now, Maghreb merely means North Africa. That was the term that the old Arab Empire used for North Africa. How big is it? Nobody's really certain. Probably several thousand fighters, maybe some other supporters. Al-Qaeda was never, even when Osama bin Laden was running it, it was never really an organization in the sense of what that really means. I mean, the people who attacked the United States at 9/11 were not from Afghanistan. They were Osama bin Laden's organization in Afghanistan. They were from West Germany and South Florida. It's an ideology, and it's a jihadist ideology. It's one that has a kind of worldwide, target. But that's not what the groups in Africa represent. They're not international jihadist groups. They call themselves Al-Qaeda, but they're not, really. They're all based around local kinds of issues, very much like the Taliban are. In Afghanistan, there's a group called Boko Haram in northern Nigeria, and it's certainly very violent and certainly capable of causing a lot of chaos. But it's totally focused on the situation in Nigeria and largely the kind of the way that the Nigerian army and the Nigerian police deal with the north, which is pretty harshly. So, you know, this stuff is we elevate it to some sort of the turbans are coming, quick, give us a lot of money and suspend your constitution, but really they're not. These groups and what's going on in northern Mali is not in any way, even by U.S. Intelligence analysis, in any way poses a threat to the United States or the West. Their interests.
Well, thank you for taking time this morning, Con, to explain what probably will still be on the plate for quite some time now.
Oh, if you want a definition of the word quagmire, try northern Mali.
Thank you. Take care.
Okay, thank you.
Our guest has been Con Hallinan, international affairs analyst and writer for Foreign Policy in Focus.